Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Booker, and today on the show, I'm talking to Derek Webb, who is the founder and brainchild of Bolin Webb. Bolin Webb is a British brand bringing design excellence to shaving, award-winning razors made in England and fitted with Gillette blades. And here is Derek to talk about Bolin Webb in his own words.
I'm as you say, the founder of Bolin Webb, which has been in business for 10 years now. In fact, last year we celebrated a 10-year anniversary, and that time's passed very quickly, and a lot has happened in those 10 years since I first launched the product into the UK market to begin with. I've got a background in manufacturing, so I'm not a product designer per se, but I know, if you like, how to bring a product idea to market and get it made. And that was really a key part of my journey in the early days.
I see.
Having said that, the idea was mine originally for these design-led razors.
Right. Sorry, I talked earlier. What kind of manufacturing were you in?
I was in aluminium and metals manufacturing, and I spent the better part of 20 years in that area, working really all over the world. I was based principally in Europe, Switzerland, Belgium, Denmark, Norway, a lot of traveling with my family at the time.
Right. And were you?
Which was a very interesting period because I got exposed to a lot of different types of business cultures, a lot of markets, also working in Asia, North America. And I think that stood me in good stead when it came to launching my own business and opening markets abroad, then I could really come to terms with what it takes to do business in a different country, how to work with different cultures, not just in a business term, but also in understanding markets, understanding people, communicating with them. And I think that's really been important for Bolin Webb in those years to open new markets. So we export about, 80% of what we do now is going into different markets across the world.
Oh, interesting. And were you, when you were in manufacturing, were you always kind of looking for that great idea, or were you always kind of on the hunt knowing you were going to go into business for yourself at some point? Were there other products in the hat or other types of genres?
No, there wasn't a master plan to be in somebody else's business in manufacturing for 20 years and then start my own. I think it was just a transition towards the end of that period that I would like to do something different. I would like to have my own business. Having said that, in my manufacturing space, I did have a fair amount of exposure to product design, to introducing new ideas to market, because I was working with mostly aluminium, and that's a product, a metal that gets used in lots of different areas. And so it was, not too difficult to leap into, I've got an idea, let's see how we can design it, let's see how we can make it. And really that background, as I said earlier, was a great strength to me at the time.
So what's the first?
So there was at the end of this period, to the end of that time to think, well, I would like to run my own business. I would like a new journey. And so you sort of, subconsciously are looking for, well, how can you do things differently? How can you be bringing innovation to market? And the idea of a razor handle dropped into my lap, if you like.
Yeah.
It's a story which is quite funny because we were on a holiday, in a skiing holiday at the time, and when you rent somewhere, it's pretty devoid of personal effects. And I walked into a shower room and all I saw was this really nasty looking old razor of mine, and I thought, why am I punishing myself with this old tool? I've got to think there's got to be something better out there, and that made me to think of, well, what is in that market? Could it be different? And at that time I did see an opportunity for bringing something which was more design-led, more appealing to the eye, aspirational, and really there was nothing in the market like that at the time.
Yeah. I mean,
and if you, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you mentioned innovation there, and I felt like that was one word that really leapt to mind when, I mean, I've seen you raise this before, but when I did a deeper dive on the website today, the actual kind of the designs, the magnet at the tip of the razor, so it looks like it's, you know, defying gravity, I think it says on the site, and it does. It looks very, very unique, almost something where you have to look twice at it. So how do you get those early steps in terms of the design element? Who do you look to go and kind of flesh these ideas out for you?
Okay. Well, at the very beginning, the first time this idea came, it was just a very personal process of saying, well, what would I like a razor handle to look like? And it's first form, you know, what shapes, what colors, what balance, how do they come across in terms of their appeal, their eye-catching appeal? And that was a very personal process. But to bring it forwards, I needed to engage with product designers. And they're the people who take these first early formed ideas and then translate it, try and capture your thinking into something that actually looks good and can be made. And that is where you need to sort of reach out beyond your own idea and take it to a professional technical designer and say, here, I would like to bring a design. Can we work together? And that working together is really important in designing, bringing innovation, that teamwork, that creativity. It's a bit, you know, wide ranging. It's a bit wacky. You know, you're looking at different ideas, looking at different approaches, coming up with crazy ideas sometimes, which you know, ultimately don't work. But it's all part of that process you have with, you know, the people you work closely with on design.
I'd love to see the ones that didn't work.
We had some crazy levitated ideas. I mean, they were never going to work. We knew it, but it was fun to talk about it.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be the next article on your site, the Nearly Razors. How did you go about raising the capital then, Derek, to get something like this off the ground?
Okay, so in the early years, let's say the first 3 to 4 years, it was all self-financed, you know? So it was a incremental growth, which, you know, when you're an early start is quite important. And cash flow management is always very important when you're running your own business, for sure. After a period of some years, we went into the world of angel networks, you know, where you start making your pitch to a group of investors who are all looking for an opportunity to make a good return on their investment. And I think we were working with 3 different investor groups, angel groups, and probably did maybe 2 or 3 pitches to different meetings. There may be 10 prospective investors in a particular meeting, and you have your 15-minute slot stuck in between some other product and another service or whatever it might be, and do your best and you try and pick up some interest, which we did. You know, we have a good investor with us who's been with us over the subsequent years, and that's been a great strength to the business as well.
And are these, I'm imagining Dragon's Den, just the format of Dragon's Den without the interviews and the guy downstairs with the quirky clocks in the background. Is it something like that?
Yeah, we were actually approached by Dragon's Den, but we'd already done our fundraising by then, and I'm glad I didn't have to go on to Dragon's Den and get pulled to pieces, quite frankly, quite as publicly as happens there. Generally speaking, the angel investment community is very genial. You know, they're very nice people. They ask good questions. They're not out to get your skin or catch you out.
Right.
They want to understand, and they want to understand what your business model is, but also where you see the end game. And that's an important discussion to take with them.
I find a lot of the pitches on Dragon's Den, people are looking to invest in the person as much as they are the product. Did you find as well with some of the pitches that you were making to the investors, that they were also looking at you as if to say, can we really invest in Derek?
I think that's very, very important, because they've got a very short space of time to try and get to know you as a prospective partner or a place where they're going to put their money. And that's not a lot of time to take measure of somebody. Of course, it's not the only meeting you'll have with them. You know, you make your first pitch, they like the idea, they like the product or service. Maybe they see you've already got a position in the market somewhere, which is a good recommendation. If they do show interest, they're going to meet you again. You know, they don't put their money on the table and say, right, there you go, here's whatever it is you've asked for, or not, for whatever share. You know, they come back to you, and then you enter what can be quite a protracted negotiation of how much you're looking for, how much you're prepared to let go for that share, and you have to get into a serious negotiation.
A bit like speed dating in a way.
Very one-way speed dating. I mean, you're just making a pitch to a lot of people you don't know, right? So
I'm imagining that was in person back in the day. I guess these would be done.
No, there was nothing on Zoom at that time. Maybe there is today. That would be really speedy. It would be difficult, actually. Because you've got to meet your investor too. You don't want just their money. That's the mistake that many make, you know. You need to partner with somebody you can work with as a business owner. And what role will that investor play in your business? Now, we're very fortunate that we've got a single investor who is interested and informed and challenging. You know, this is the one person who asks me the most difficult questions, and it frustrates me sometimes, but he's absolutely doing the right thing to do that.
Yeah, it's almost like the check to your balance, pardon the pun.
There you go.
Away from investments, Derek, over the last 10 years the brand's been going. Could you note any real fundamental changes that you've seen in men's grooming over that time that really stick out to you?
Well, yes, there have been a lot of profound changes to men's grooming on the tool side, not even to talk about skincare, which is a very complicated world on its own. Within the world of tools, when we started, the market was fairly straightforward. It was the disposable razor, it was the technical category of the blade with the Gillettes and Wilkinson swords, and then you jump to the more exclusive Badger Brush Gentleman ebony ivory shop. So there was nothing in that middle space we were looking at, which was contemporary design, affordable luxury with a sort of eye-catching and aspirational twist. So we've, in a way, plugged a gap there. Those were early days, but since that, of course, the big moves you've seen are the emergence of subscription services. And back in 2015 or thereabouts, there were a large number of new entrants which came in to that market on the back of Dollar Shave Club and Harry's in the US. And particularly the Harry's story is remarkable, where they launched the subscription service and then were bought out and now are a much more mainstream brand, which you could buy in a supermarket. So I don't know what the future of subscription will be as a, you know, mainstream shaving area, or whether it's just an evolution, we'll see. But that world is very much about capturing the blade market, competing with Gillette, for example. We would like to be supplying blades to consumers, not the the handle or the shaving set. So that's a very profound change. Another big change is the emergence of the safety razor as a much more popular tool for shavers, you know, in Western markets, not really in Asian markets.
And do you think that people are now using safety razors more, let's just say in the last half year with what's going on with pandemics, etc.? Maybe they want to go out a bit more now that restrictions are easing. And do you think like people are now wanting to have the pleasure of shaving again for events and going out?
Yes, I would have thought so, but it's difficult for me to measure that. I would say, I mean, clearly the emergence of the beard wasn't there to the degree when I started the business. Mm. So again, that's been a disruptive trend to shaving tools, if you like, and has had to force the major players to address the question of how do men with beards shave. Okay, yeah. So even if you are with a beard, you're likely to want to have a razor. You might not be shaving as often as if you're clean shaven like me, but you know, you're going to have a razor of some sort in your toolkit.
I always find that a bit wacky, to be honest with you, Derek. I mean, I've seen a bunch of, say, influencer friends with full-on beards, and then they're kind of endorsing razors. I'm like, how are you guys even using this? Are you using it for like the tiniest bit on the cheekbone? I mean, is it just something that they're just saying yes to because it's another opportunity to, you know, do a partnership and get some money?
Probably that too. But you'd have to really ask a man with a beard why do they need a razor. But yes, certainly trimming a line, you know, certain blades have trimming blades on them too, but also, you know, they're parts of your face or your neck or indeed, you know, other parts of your body that you want to take a razor to. So
I should just round them up and go, what's going on?
Very clear cut beard, so there you go.
Well, Derek, what about the state of play with Bolin Web now? So like we say, 10 years on, I assume this is more of the 9-to-5 or a way of life, as it were. I don't imagine your pencils down at 5 p.m. But what kind of position is the company in now? How many people are working for you?
Well, we're a small company, very small company. So we're only 4 people in here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So what we are doing is working with a network of different partners that may be product designers or graphic designers or web internet people, PR distribution partners. So I've really built the business on the back of having good, strong relations with external partners, not by employing people within the company itself.
Well, it looks on the website, which is bolinweb.com, by the way, it looks a lot bigger company than 4 people. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but it feels like a more global brand where more people should be involved behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, we're a small company. I think coming back to your question about which direction we're going, I think the important thing is to bring newness to our product portfolio. So we have quite a lot of new products in the pipeline, which we're looking to introduce later this year.
And collaborations as well?
We've done some collaborations. We had a collaboration last year with a Chinese artist called Mr. Slowboy. He does a number of different brand collaborations, which are rather fun. His artwork is a sort of cartoon Tintin type genre, which is eye-catching too. He was a collaboration we worked with because, you know, it's an appeal in China, which is one of our biggest markets.
Right. I like that. There's a gentleman in a pinstripe suit holding a mobile phone with a briefcase on the handle, kind of like a hand-drawn cartoon, like you're saying. Do you plan on doing any more of these?
We might do a second version of this later in the year. The one you refer to, we call him the man from Mayfair. He was he was only came to market last summer, so we don't want to repeat it too quickly for that China audience.
What about, is it possible for people to do their own designs and then maybe have them on your razor? So something that they could even personalize themselves.
Yeah, great idea. Personalization, if only with initials, would be great as well. But because these products are painted and lacquered, it's a very complicated process to modify them beyond what's on offer. That product you talked about, the cartoon character of the man in his pinstripe, is a very special technology, which is essentially tattooing that image into the razor handle. And right. We couldn't repeat that on an individual basis.
I see. Well, maybe an idea for the future of some kind. But I think that's one of the big standouts. And there's many that you can find on the Bolin Web website. Different colours. And again, the Union Jack one there, that's on there. Also, there, when I was going to go onto the site, I was expecting to pay a lot more for these. They're all really accessibly priced.
I think we've always tried to bring a premium product, which was affordable luxury, if you like, not out of reach. And I've always kept that close to me. It's still a lot of money for a razor, of course. You know, it's not going to ever compete with a supermarket shop. But somebody who's looking to find something different, somebody who's got an eye for design, likes to have, dare I say it, beautiful products around them, well-designed products around them. It is a tool which can sit in your bathroom and is eye-catching, is, you know, looks great. And many people find that that's important to them, and I understand that completely. That's what's driving me.
Yeah.
You know, I like the tools I use or the things I buy that do make a difference, that do stand out and look good and are well designed, well thought through and last a good long time.
And especially for guys, I mean, I think living with my partner, she's got the entire cabinet to herself and pretty much the entire drawer. Now, I might have a little tiny part of that for a bit of aftershave and, you know, a bit of my own kind of creams and whatnot, but having something in there that is like the standout that's yours compared to the rest of the junk that's going on the other side is quite important for guys, I think. I should have said that before.
I agree with that. And I agree with that. And I think your partner would probably agree that if you had a Bolin Web razor in your bathroom, she would allow you to let that take pride of place.
Yeah.
And you've got to be careful that she doesn't start using it when you're not looking.
Yeah, like she does with most of the aftershaves. Well, yeah. Derek, been a real pleasure having you on the show. And what's next for you for Bolin Web? Are we looking at any new releases, any anniversaries?
Well, as I said, we're working on a number of new products which we want to bring to market. I think there was a something of a release after COVID where we can step up our product development game now. So we have been working through COVID with designers on newness, on razors and accessories, which I'm very excited about. I look forward to these coming to market in the months to come without going into detail.
Excellent. A nice teaser there. Well, we can... We can find out more when it's coming out on bolinweb.com, and we'll put all the links over on the show notes over at Menswear Style. But in the meantime, Derek, great fun talking to you. Thanks for taking the time out today.
Thank you very much, Peter.
You've been listening to the Menswear Style podcast. Be sure to head over to menswearstyle.co.uk for more menswear content and email info@menswearstyle.co.uk if you would like to be a future guest on the show. Finally, please help support the show by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next time.